let's look at the process of acquiring a team. And one of the initial activities performed is the human resource allocation for the project. And it's very important, the two key aspects, of course we'll get into lots of them, is availability of the team and how can I obtain them. So you not only have to confirm the human resource availability, but they're available, how can I bring them on board? So these are some of the key aspects which we'll get into in a little more detail as well. So what does this require? This requires developing a plan for identifying roles and responsibilities, skills and reporting relationship and staff management plan. Roles and responsibilities clearly so that there is as little conflict as possible as far as roles and responsibilities are concerned. Skills, because we need to have appropriate skills at the appropriate levels. Reporting relationships. A large number of times, in fact, majority of the times, there is conflict between project managers, functional managers, team heads, who is reporting to who, dotted line report, direct report, dual report. A lot of conflict and stress actually happens because of reporting relationship confusion. So a prudent staff management plan will have a reporting relationship which is very clearly defined, and we have seen in some of the previous chapters those diagrams in terms of charts, etc. So it is not difficult if you have properly thought it out to put a proper reporting relationship together. And the staff management plan, how will you develop them, how will you hone their skills? Now it is important to keep in mind that on large projects, the larger the project, very often you will not have 100% of the team members come on board at the same time. Because a very large project, a longer duration project, is going to have various stages. And some of those team members may be required only at later stages rather than earlier stages. And bringing them on board in earlier stages would lead to them sitting idle. They are not yet required. You have them on board, you are costing for them, budgeting for them, but you are not getting any productivity or utilization out of them. At the same time, they are not working on something else that they could be working on. So on larger projects, you may have team members coming in at different stages of the project's life cycle, which also needs to be pre-decided in your whole plan, staffing plan, and your plan to acquire a team. Now, let's look at the various inputs and tools which are required. Overall, project management is the basic input, and there are various little nuances which will go into creating this. So first of all, roles and responsibilities, as we already mentioned. And in this role and responsibility, it is very important that we indicate number of people needed for the project. So number is very important. We've been talking estimation. But one of the key things of estimation is to arrive at the number of people. If I have not arrived at the number of people, I just cannot start because I have team heads. I don't even know how many team heads I may have with them, or I have a random number of people. I don't know whether this is appropriate, not appropriate. So the number of people is very important. This is one of the initial first steps of a staffing acquisition plan. And in the staff management plan, it is another key aspect is the time frame. I need this number of people. For what duration do I need them? At what stage of the project life cycle do I need them? So not only how many do I need them for 45 days? Do I need them for 2 weeks? Do I need them for 6 months? Do I need them for 2 years? And how many do I need at which stage? So your periods and durations become very, very important. Other information which becomes important is, do they have the required skill? Are they even willing to work on this project? So I have a resource who is who is an expert at coding or at testing, and I want to pull him in onto this specific project, whereas he's working on something else. Now in his career plan and in his aspiration and with various other factors that pertain to him or his bosses, there may be unwillingness for him to actually even be part of this project, though he's completely capable and has the competency of working on this project. So I have identified a resource, but he is unavailable or unwilling to be available. So that is also a factor, because otherwise I estimate and then my risk and uncertainty goes up because my resource is not willing to work with me or is not available to work with me. then I also have to keep in mind what is their prior experience, what is the kind of prior experience they are bringing into the picture, and if they are working with me, what is the cost at which they are working with me? Because the cost of the manpower is going to be one of the major costs that I'm going to be dealing with over and above my technical costs and various other costs, product costs. So what is the cost at which he is? So I have identified a resource, but he costs thrice the amount that I thought he would cost. Then clearly he is not an available resource to me. I cannot have him on board at that three times the price. Another very important aspect is personal administration policies, especially for people like outsourced staff. How will I remunerate them? What will their work hours be? What will their medical leave be? What will their medical compensation be? What will their leave days be? So this is important not just for on-roll staff, it is very important even for off-roll staff. So across, I need to have a very set guideline of my personal administration, because without that, there can be confusion. There could be someone who is saying that I am not being given as much leave as the others. There is discrimination. There is this, there is that. So it is very important to have a very seamless personal administration policy. And locations is very important. I repeatedly keep saying that we are working in a global village where we are working from multiple locations. Now, from these multiple locations, do I have a project where I'm going to be bringing everyone on site? Very often you hear about people working on site or working at the client site. A lot of consultants, and especially consultants in the IT domain space, work on client sites. So no matter where their base office is, Gurgaon, Bangalore, wherever, if their client is sitting in Navi Mumbai, they are on site working in Navi Mumbai. So on my project, are they going to be working from a single location, multiple location, what those locations are going to be becomes a very important part. Now there are some stages in the acquisition process, one of those being the pre-assignment stage. Now very often there is a bidding or a competitive proposal for specific people are promised to be part of a project team, or if the project is dependent upon the expertise of a particular person, or if a staff assignment is defined in the project charter, then it is considered as pre-assigned. So I have already identified this resource. There is a bidding process for him. He has been pre-assigned. He's a very key resource and it has been predefined in the charter. Then he is a pre-assigned resource and that is already decided. So there is some amount of pre-assignment which may come, not essentially, but could come with my staffing plan. Then you have your negotiation. What do we mean by negotiation? Now, if I'm pulling in people from other departments, as we spoke about the project structure where people were being pulled in for a project from various other departments, and then at the end of the project going back to their regular day-to-day business activities, then when I'm pulling them from other projects or other departments, when I'm pulling them in from other departments, then they have functional heads in those departments and bosses. So I have to negotiate with them to let them leave their resources for the time frame of this project. That this is important. He will have to give up the time, the number of hours committed to his regular work or to that other project, because he has to be assigned to this project and he is most capable and most efficient at delivering on this project for this level and at this skill. So there is going to be negotiation between functional managers and project managers, which will be required from time to time, because it's not like people are willing, if they have a good and efficient resource working for them who's actually fulfilling a very key requirement, they will not be easily willing to give up and send their resource that yes, please go be part of that other project, because then they have to think of how they are going to fill in that person's shoes. So functional managers have to ensure that the project is assigned resources with appropriate skills and these are made available in the required time frame, for which they need to have the buy-in of your other departmental heads as well. And it is also important that they are willing to work on the project until their responsibilities are completed. So if I am pulling in someone on a project, but he is not authorized to give up his regular day-to-day business activities. When I gave that example in that earlier chapter of being pulled in to this project for this MNC bank, moving away from my regular corporate sales activities to activities of mobilizing NRI funds in the Middle East market, for a specific 45-day mandate. Then I had proper authorization from my bosses in my department, in my corporate sales department, to be part of this, to let go of my regular activities for those 45 days and be part of the specific task force and project. If I did not have that authorization, then I could not have worked on this dual system and I could not have stepped away for 45 days. So that is very important. And other project management teams within the performing organizations have to appropriately assign their scarce and specialized human resources, because everyone is pooling in from the fairly similar pool. So you have to optimize the utilization of any resource when you are picking what projects they work on. Now, projects and resources, as I said, could be internal resources, but there could be external stakeholders also. When we were talking about stakeholders, we spoke about customer, of course, who's the end user. But there are also a lot of other external stakeholders like your vendors, suppliers, contractors, etc. So you have to ensure that these are lined up. You need to know who all you need lined up. These are lined up, and not only lined up, you have to keep in mind negotiation with them. What are the costing terms that they are working with you with? What are the legal guidelines? What are the other criteria that I need to fulfill when I lack in-house ability and I have to go out and get these external stakeholders and external participants to be part of my project as well. Now we're coming to a very interesting thing called the virtual teams. We have constantly been talking of different locations. We are in a situation where project management requires different locations, people who never come face to face. Now, some of the advantages of that could be that people, you have experts across the globe. Every time you can't fly down experts, but if you have virtual teams where they don't have to be on the same location at the same time, then you're actually tapping into the different experiences and expertise of a multiple number of people across locations and bringing the best to a certain project. So virtual teams are teams made up of people with a shared goal. That is your project management, eventual desired outcome, what your project charter says. And they fulfill their roles with little or no time spent meeting face to face. They may never meet face to face. They may meet over Skype, they may only speak over the phone, they may only chat over the email or some messenger. They will never meet, yet they are all on the same page as far as the project mandate and goal is concerned. And they are geographically located at different places and only communicate through electronic media. Now, I think especially in IT firms and with software programs, and do you think that the people in Microsoft in Bangalore actually go and meet their Microsoft counterparts in California all the time? I don't think so. Chances are that there has been someone working in Microsoft Bangalore for maybe 3 years or 2 years or 5 years who's actually never physically interacted with his counterpart sitting overseas anywhere, or may not even have physically interacted with his counterpart sitting anywhere within India also. Because there are virtual meetings happening, this is the electronic age where there is electronic chatting and meeting happening. So these, yet they are part of the same team, they are part of the same project management team, and they are all working towards that specified pre-decided goal which has already been mandated. And the advantages is that different geographical locations can come in and add a special expertise which may not be available in that specific geographical location. So if I have a quality control person who is absolutely fantastic and who I know knows as much as the government regulatory quality control people, but he does not physically sit in the same location where my software developers are sitting. He is in another country and he is unwilling or unavailable to come here, or my costing does not permit me to physically fly him down, then I am confident that through this virtual team, he can very much be part of everything, very much vet everything, very much go through everything and still give me the required green signals and be involved in a legally permissible manner. So this special expertise which can come in, which is not otherwise available, I may have to go for any other quality control person if I don't have access to this person, which I may not be as satisfied with. So this specialized expertise is coming in because of virtual teams. Also, they enable employees to work from home. Now, there are employees who get married, who have children, who prefer to work from home. It provides the flexibility of working from home. Sometimes you are working across different time zones. So if you are working across different time zones, there are different shifts. So if I am working and I'm constantly working with someone working on the East Coast in the US, then East Coast in the US means when it's 9 in the morning for them, it's some 9 or 10 in the night for me, or it's 9 or 10 hours behind. So it's 6 or 7 in the night for me. So 6 or 7 in the night when they are waking up means someone needs to do a night shift. Now it's possible to do a night shift maybe by being part of a virtual team where you're sitting at home. You don't have to be physically sitting in office to be able to do that, which you know may not be possible for you. And it allows virtual teams to move forward with projects that would not have been possible due to travel expenses. Travel expenses are humongous. Most of these software development firms will be flying down people. They will not be taking them by regular transport, even if it is within the country, if we are not even talking internationally. So versus couple of thousands of expense over a period of time in electronic media versus couple of lakhs in terms of your other modes of transport or your modes of international modes of transport. So clearly the costing advantage that comes in because of virtual teams is a significant lends a significant benefit to any kind of project management. And communication is very, very important for virtual teams, because you're not going to be sitting in the same office walking up to the colleague's desk and saying, hey, I have to share this information with you, I have to share that information with you. It is important when work is being done across different time zones, it is being done across people who are not meeting, there is some centralized system either through emails, messages, blogs, daily reports which are being circulated to the entire team. Everyone is being kept copied. They are going to a central source where everyone can have access to this information so that conflict can be resolved, so that decision making can happen, so that you are working without constantly having to acknowledge the limitation of not being physically in the same location. And it is very much possible and very much happening these days. It's a matter of having someone an email away. Even if it's a different time zone, you just have to wait for a couple of hours to get a response. What are the outputs of a team acquisition? At the end of all this exercise of finding a resource, right skill, project management, we'll have following tasks accomplished. One is project staff assignments. When appropriate people have been assigned to work on it, the project is staff documentation can include project team directory, memos to team members, names inserted into their part of the project management plan, such as project organization charts and schedules. So you can have everything very, very verifiable, documented, accountability assigned, stages at which that accountability will come into the picture, who is doing what, and anyone can refer back to it at any point of time, go back to it, and it's a very, very seamless plan for the entire project lifetime. Now, another important aspect of your entire resource planning for your project management and the human resource aspect of it is the resource calendar. And very important, as I keep mentioning all the time, is not just the number of people coming on board, not just the skill set of the people coming on board, but also the resource calendar that these people have to, the time frame that these people have to be associated with the product, with the project. What are the life cycles of the project? What stage of the project will they come on board in? So that will all form part of your resource calendar, which documents the time period each project team member can work on the project. And creating a reliable final schedule depends on having a good understanding of each person's schedule conflicts, including vacation time and commitment to other projects. Now, again, that takes you back to another aspect that we discussed of actual hours. So when you are saying that I will have an output in 9 to 6 o'clock, 5-day work week over a period of 6 months, you are not factoring in vacation time. You are not factoring in the time that this resource has to spend on other projects. So your actual hours will actually be documented very well in a resource calendar when you are factoring in things like this, where time is being dedicated to other things as well, whether it's personal commitments or work commitments. So that is an important part of your staffing management plan. Now, looking at updates in staff management plan, why updates? If I already have an estimate, I've already got people on board, why am I looking at updates or any changes or making it dynamic? Because you cannot ever have an exact staffing requirement. Things will be dynamic, requirements will change. There could be changes because of things like promotions, illness, performance issues, someone is not delivering on what you thought they would deliver on, someone has retired, someone has quit their job, moved on. So there will be a dynamic staffing updation plan, staffing management plan, and there will be constant updates to it based on the changing scenarios that are involved. When you're planning for acquiring a team, you need to keep in mind various things, and some of the various kinds of teams are functional operating team, cross-functional team, self-managing team, self-defining team, and top executive team. So these are some of the different team structures that we will look into. Different projects based on different organizations, different desired outcomes can resort to a different kind of team structure. So a functional team structure would have typically formally appointed leaders with team members having similar knowledge but of specialized function. So this could be an example of this could be multiple resources with similar technical skills, and there is a formally appointed leader who all of these people with similar technical skills are reporting into. This is your functional operating team, where functional knowledge is more or less similar for your various team members of specialized or various specialized areas. Then you have your cross-functional team, where you would also have a formal leader and whose team members would have knowledge and of different functions and come together for a similar project. So when you give an example of this, you look at a TQM program or kickoff of a new promotion, where there are different people from different departments with different knowledge, also a leader being there, who are coming in. So there is no specialized similar knowledge out here. People are coming in with different kinds of knowledge and they are stakeholders on that project. A self-management team, as the name suggests, there is no formal leader. Leadership may happen by rotation, and again, people are from similar sort of functions, or sometimes you may have an external leader in the same organization just as a mentor or a coach or someone to turn to just for guidance from time to time, but not in terms of a regular team manager who gets involved in the day-to-day activities. So it is more of an informal, flexible kind of structure where everyone from time to time is taking ownership. Then you have self-defining teams, where also you have no formal leader and leadership may rotate, but you have a facilitator who acts as a leader. And an example of this could be a project management office staff member. So the various staff members in the project management office could just rotate among themselves and be acting as facilitators. Now keep in mind, a facilitator is someone who is just goading you along, acting as a catalyst. He is not someone who is acting as a supervisor where you have to constantly report to. So there is a difference between supervisor and a facilitator who is simply acting as a catalyst. Now look at this diagram. It will give you an idea of some of the various features of the various kinds of teams. So clearly, in a self-defining team, you see autonomy being very high. Duration is variable. Stability is variable because there is no one person taking decisions. So obviously stability is a little variable. Now in a functional operating system where autonomy is low because you have a formal leader, you also see that the stability is high, for the reason that a single decision maker is going to take quicker decisions where everyone has to follow those decisions, and there is a formal structure in place out there. How do you develop project teams? Developing project team is the process of the environment to enhance the project performance. So I've got these people on board. I'm taking them through the process of forming and storming, and hopefully to the process of norming, where, you know, things start smoothing out. But how can I best create an environment and develop them so that I'm getting the best possible outcome of their capabilities? You can have the same person with a similar capability being very productive on a certain project and not really being very productive on another project based on the environment that is created for him or her. And we keep talking about skill acquisition for team members. Let's not forget, skill acquisition is also required for project managers to manage teams, which a lot of times projects fail because it's just assumed that anyone assigned to a project management role by default has the skills to manage a team as well. That is not the case. Project managers also need to acquire skills to identify, build, motivate, lead, and inspire project teams to achieve high performance and meet the project objectives. So while we keep talking about training and development for team members, training and development and coaching is very, very essential for project managers also. Let's not forget that. It includes both enhancing the ability of the stakeholders and project team to work as a cohesive group. Now, if I'm getting people from diverse backgrounds, different levels of personal convictions in terms of how liberal, how conservative there are, different language barriers, different expertise, to get all of them to behave as a cohesive team is not something which happens just by instruction. Let's all work together and be a happy family. That's not the way things work. You have to get everyone together in a systematic way, work through the issues to get them to start delivering. And this is absolutely important and a key responsibility of the project manager. Team building is basically forming a project into a cohesive group, and there are various ways in teams can be built so that you are bringing in a diverse and multidisciplinary group together so that they all understand that the final success of this project, despite my individual differences, the final success is going to work well for the entire team. So when you're working for an organization, if you're working for a Wipro, when the project does well, which adds revenue, the entire team is lauded. When all the projects do well, the company has great profitability, the share price of the company goes up, and all employees who are shareholders, all of their personal net worth goes up. So everyone is sharing a common goal. So you have to have a common goal, and everyone should enjoy working together while aligning themselves for this common goal. And other characteristics of cohesive teams are that they have loyalty to the project and respect for the project members' decisions, and accomplish individual work that supports overall project goals. We keep talking about the overall project goal because till you have everyone's buy-in, if there's a team member who feels, okay, this overall project goal is really not going to impact my life. I'm doing my day-to-day work. I'm getting my salary. Whether this project succeeds or doesn't succeed, it doesn't really make a difference because I'm not going to reap the benefits of it. Then clearly, satisfaction and productivity has already gone out of the window. So he has to align himself and to the overall project goal that, yes, this goal is going to positively impact me also. And diverse and multidisciplinary teams are interdependent. As we discussed in the past, people are not working in silos. B's work is dependent on A's delivery. A's delivery is dependent on C's delivery. So there are interdependencies. So the sooner the teams become cohesive, the better. And they should enjoy working together in this way. We already discussed these various stages of when the team comes together in the formation stage, when conflicts are arising in the storming stage, because in the formation stage, the team members don't really know each other. They've come together for the first time. There is the issues coming up. In the norming stage, the issues are being resolved. In the performing stage, delivery is actually happening. And in the adjourning stage, the team is being disbanded and people are going back to other projects or other responsibility areas. And the project is now over and done with. So every manager should have the skills to get the best out of the team in these various stages and create, and he has a very key responsibility in the storming stage so that resolution can be arrived at for conflict, stress can be reduced, and you can peacefully and harmoniously move into the norming stage, which is your conflict resolution beginning to happen. It is very important to keep the team members motivated, because without recognition and reward, even the simplest of person is going to start wilting. A lot of times managers don't have the training or the coaching to resolve conflict, to reduce stress, to keep people motivated. And we have to keep reminding ourselves that coaching is required and training is required, not just for the team members, but also for the project managers. to make sure that their teams are delivering the best. High team performance can be used, can be achieved by open communication. Trust is very important. Conflict management is very important. And problem solving. So see the focus on trust, problem solving, conflict management, and repeatedly open communication, even when you have people across geographical locations. Communication is something which cannot be compromised. And in this day and age of technology, there is no reason why communication should be compromised also. So you have teams of individual people who can be very productive and teams of same teams of individual people who can be unproductive based on how they are spearheaded and pioneered by their project manager. It is a very, very important aspect to remember. Already stated, again stating, because it is very important to know the various stages of a team formation. Forming is when the team members have come together. They are don't really have a level of rapport, trust with the other team members because they don't know each other. This is the first time that they are coming together and defining themselves as a team. During this stage, everyone is a little apprehensive and tends to be a little independent on their own. The manager has to play an active role in team building exercises, group activities, morale boosting activities, rapport building activities to create some sort of sense of bonding between the team members. These could be by way of orientation programs, getting everyone, orienting them, one-on-one goal setting, group discussions to get people to open up, group discussions on maybe some non-project related things as well, so that people have their guard down and are beginning to share their strengths and personalities, team pairing. And basically the key message here is we want to build a good rapport between team members. That is the agenda out here. Without rapport building, you really can't achieve much. Storming is when the issues start. They start working together and the initial issues start coming up. This is your storming stage. The team manager's role becomes very important in a storming stage because that is the first level of escalation that the team members will go to. And if in this stage the team manager refuses, does not succeed in delivering in terms of resolving or responding to the conflict, then the team members will be feeling very directionless and your work will be stalled and work will be stuck and it can create long-term issues. Norming stage is when your acceptance is happening. Conflicts are getting resolved. The common goal is being accepted by everyone. The fact that every member on this team is aligned to this common goal is being accepted by everyone. And if this is not the case, then people... This is now not the case that there is too much conflict. Acceptance is coming in and people are beginning to work through in a process. After your norming stage comes your performing stage. Your performing stage is the stage where delivery is actually happening. Acceptance has happened. Now the team is working like a well-oiled machine. Conflict may be happening, but few and far, not day-to-day, everyday conflict. Bonding has happened, rapport building has happened. Everyone is familiar with everyone. Communication is happening and everyone is working towards the long-term goal. And finally, you have the adjourning stage. Team has completed the work and is moving on from the project. Duration of this stage depends on team dynamics, team size and leadership. So you may have some people who may finish their work on a certain project sooner than the others. So the project life cycle will have different phases. So adjourning stage may be different and the dynamics may be different. And then you have to close the project, move on from the project and move on to something else. General management skills are soft skills or interpersonal skills, which are very important towards team development. So two people may have the best of abilities in terms of leadership, etc. But if there is conflict between the two and if there is unhealthy competition between the two, then it defeats the purpose of the team. Now that same unhealthy competition through development of soft skills can be made into healthy competition as well. So soft skill development, making people understand each other, getting to the base of issues, communications, etc. are very, very important and improves cooperation and generally gets a positive sentiment between the team members. This is where training becomes very, very important. So whenever we are talking about training, when it comes to skill enhancement, like technical training, let's not forget that soft skills training, like behavioral training, anger management, understanding your team dynamics, communications training, all of stress management, all of these things are equally important when it comes to capability building, not just your technical skills, which is also important. So training is a very important aspect. Ground rules have to be laid down by the project manager. Ground rules could be your daily schedule sending, your feedback reports, which everyone has to have access to, your time hour reports, which everyone has to have access to, your turnaround time or TATs, which everyone must adhere to. So ground rules have to be laid down, which all the members should follow. And this is the responsibility of the project manager to lay those out. And training should be part of the bonding exercise plus the skill enhancement exercise. And training should be delivered in a way where you are identifying them properly. You are delivering the trainings. And you are also then observing whether the delivered trainings have achieved the desired result or not. And there are various ways to measure that, which we will come to when we delve into training in a lot more detail. And appraisals conducted during the process of managing the process. Appraisals is a very important part of your project management. This is where a chance where a team member gets to really sit with the project manager and get informed feedback about performance, give informed feedback in terms of things which need to be resolved. So all of this forms a very important part of your rapport building and successful team management. You keep in mind that team building activities like offsites, etc., are very effective in improving interpersonal relationships, and group activities, etc., are also very important because sometimes these allow two team members to expose themselves to each other without their guard being up. So while at work, while working on the project, you may be sticking to a certain issue. If you are working on a team building activity which takes you a little away from a project, distracts your minds a little bit and works on something else, then your guard is down and you will allow your strengths to show up. You will allow yourself to see the strengths of your team person as well. Co-location involves enhancing people's ability to perform as a team by placing many or all active team members in the same physical location, and it could be temporarily or at a strategically important time. Now, keep in mind, co-location may or may not be possible. When we are working with multinational organizations, working on projects which are cross-country, then co-location may not always be possible. But yes, co-location and physical proximity does help the rapport building. But in this day and age, co-location may not always be cost-effective or possible. So to summarize, we have seen resource estimation, we have seen the process of acquiring human resources and how to manage those resources and how to get the best out of your resources. That brings us to the end of this discussion. Thank you.